This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic. It's episode 67, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 23rd of April, 2008.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Three couples went to a minister about becoming new members of his church. The minister said they would first have to go without sex for 2 weeks and then come back and tell him how it went. 2 weeks passed and the couples returned to the minister. The retired couple said it was no problem at all. The middle-aged couple said it was tough for the first week, but after that it was no problem. The newlyweds, however, said it was fine until she dropped the can of paint. A can of paint? Asked the minister. Yeah, said the newlywed man. She dropped the can and when she bent over to pick it up, I had to have her right then and there. Lust took over. The minister shook his head and said, I'm sorry, but you're not welcome in this church. That's okay, said the man. We're not welcome in the Home Depot either.
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of East, my friends. Son of East, and welcome. You've managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, show number 67. And it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's April the 23rd, 2008. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And I'm thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you with us for what I know is going to be a great show. And normally when I say I know it's going to be a great show, I'm just kind of blowing smoke up my own ass and guessing because we haven't actually done the show at that point. So it's a crapshoot. It may be a great show. It may not be a great show. We all have the best of intentions. But as we know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And for an extra dollar, you can get a window seat. However, today's show, very special episode of Schnauzer Logic, I know that it's a great show because I've just finished today's show. You may be asking yourself. Yes, because I'm sitting here alone in the studio today. As it turns out, Parviz is not able to join us today. He is sent me an email yesterday saying that his plumbing education, I guess, is ramping up. I don't know. They're in its finals. I don't know. But he explained it to me in detail, and yet I was incredibly bored. So Parviz was very apologetic and said that he really wanted to be here, but he was not sure whether he'd be able to be here for the next few weeks, and he knew he wouldn't be able to be here today, and then things obviously should get a little bit easier for him. So we obviously wish him well and understand that. And then Sherry, who was not able to be here last week, which you guys wouldn't have known because we didn't do a show last week, but when we were planning on doing the show last week, Sherry was on vacation with her family and expected to be back in the studio with us today. But when Sherry returned from vacation, all hell had broken loose at her job, which happens more often than we all care to imagine. And so Sherry's not able to be here today. And I think knowing that Sherry and Parviz would not be here... Oh, and Sean called me to let me know that he would also not be able to come over the hill. He's been working and helping out a very sick friend. Sean is, among all the other things that we know him to be, he is a man of tremendous compassion and a great heart. And just a dear friend to all of his friends, not just me. And so Sean called to say that he would not be able to be here today either. So without Sean, without Sherry, and without Parviz in the studio, my normal inclination at the last minute is usually to say, nah, we'll skip the show. But I couldn't skip the show because on today's show, we'll be talking with and playing music from an amazing performer, Lisa Parade. Now, if you live in the United States and you have watched the ABC sitcom Miss Manners with Judy Greer, you know the little theme song, which they only play for like, I don't know, it's like 10, 15 seconds, depending upon how they cut up the individual shows. But it's this wonderful theme song called Beautiful Possibility. And it's infectious and it's wonderful. And I wound up just realizing how much I was humming it and loving it and wanted to know who the artist was, and wound up watching the beginning of the show using closed captioning so I could figure out that the show, that the music was from the Lisa Parade, and then went on the internet and found out that there was a webpage for myspace.com/loverparade, and then from there I went over to loverparade.com and found out everything about the... Anyhow, Lisa Parade is on the show today, and all the music today is from Lisa Parade, or the Lisa Parade, or just Parade. You'll hear in our conversation that there were a number of incarnations of her various bands and groups and what have you, but I love her music, and I think you will too. So we're doing the show today. There you go. All right. And, of course, we have our regulars. Even without anybody else in the studio, we have Mr. Gibbadonna. We have Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney coming to the end of his run. Harry Whittington. Whitney. Kenneth.
Home network.
Sammy.
English, motherfucker. Do you speak it?
Allie. Parvis.
Nonsense babber.
In absentia. Jerry.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
Barbara.
When is a good fairy going to take off my penis?
The first daughter, X.
It's none of your business.
And of course,
I'm Brian Cox.
There you go. God bless you all. So we are having a show today. I've done it. It's great. let's see. What can I tell you going through my notes here? I don't know. Really not. Really don't really need to tell you anything, I guess. I made some notes about one of the things I wanted to talk about. But I'm now realizing that I actually talked about a lot of those things, which is confusing for me. We talked about that. Can't tell you, but it was good. And we talked about that. Can't tell you, but it was good. I think we're good to go. I think what we'll do, since I'm looking at the show here and it's already kind of run over the two-hour mark, that what I'll do is I'll just go right into the first break and play some tunage. That's what I'll do. I'm going to actually play... The first song I'll play is Beautiful Possibility, which is the Lisa Parade song that is used as the theme for Misguided. And if you have not heard... Actually, if you have heard the theme on Misguided, you won't recognize the beginning of the actual single because they only use a little snippet from the chorus. And I'm going to play the entire song for you. So there you go. When we come back... What we'll be doing is talking to Sean Meehan, who'll be on the phone with us, and Doug Sovereign of KCBS News Radio, who has a political blog over at sovereignnation.blogspot.com, or over at KCBS. He does reporting for them as well. And we talk about the Pennsylvania primary and what's happening right now in the Democratic Party and the chaos, which you will hear is, I think at some level, thrilling to Doug Sovereign as a reporter, and horrifying to me as a citizen who really wants... It's not that I want clarity. It's that I don't see the value of bloodying up, quite frankly, any of the candidates. I don't think that they're meat that needs to be tenderized. I think that these are people that we want to be our leaders, and instilling in them a sense of hopelessness isn't the first step towards leading me. And maybe that's what Beautiful Possibility is all about. So it's a good song to begin with. So that's what we'll do. We'll play Beautiful Possibility, come back, talk to Sean. I, of course, will be done with the show at that point, probably fast asleep. You're going to love it. It's a great show. I'm inviting you to stick around. Robin Goldstein, I just said that. All right, stick around.
Sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
This song's for everybody, everyone who wants to take the torch for this moment in time, for all the heartbreak, the war, because heads still hang low. When you sing a victory song, people rest where they fall, no matter whose side they're on. From the power of compassion to the power of one, two, three, we got the love, it's time we'll give out some. I said, we got the love, it's time we'll give out some. You'll never get in trouble with it. Snuggle it, cuddle it, mark it with a beat, and put it in the oven for Amundo and me. You see, the country is free, supposedly. Put the tap in my phones and I don't agree. Mr. Wartime Leader, your words are clear. Your beady eyes back and your ears don't hear. I fear the time is here and that it might be too late. And then I remember November of 2008.
Another headline, another gun, another life, another bad plan, another bad man, another dime.
job? And did you really think we'd sit and listen to you contradict your sick dictator, terminate a military addict? You're at it again and again. You're squashing eyes on lies, continuing to pretend in this millennium. We won't forget you, your smug ass smile, hiding behind wild pile of lies. 5 miles high, representing all the many, many years of swine. And it's about time we had something to say. The holiday is way over and it's time to pay. Love, hope, fear, keep things in motion, but you must stay control for devotion. You better all be voting in 2008, an emotional vote for the human race. Emergency, another crisis, another headline, another gun, another life, another bad plan, another madman, another domino, another speech, another weekend. It's about time we had a renaissance to be the headlines, to remind us that we're just a possibility. We're our infinity. Well, we're beautiful. We're just a beautiful possibility. Well, we're beautiful. Well, we're beautiful. We're just a beautiful possibility.
Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're some number of minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. The number of minutes is undetermined at this point for reasons which will be made clear to you at the beginning of the show, although given when we're taping this, suffice it to say, in order to really understand the complete flow of the show in a temporal sense, Superman will have to fly around your house 3 times backwards, and then it'll all make sense. But anyhow, welcome on back. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com, etc., etc. Big week here in the United States. Big night yesterday in the United States in Pennsylvania. The Democratic primary season continues apace. Last night, Hillary Clinton won handily in the Pennsylvania primary, coming in with just about 10-point lead over Barack Obama. The punditry said pretty much anything less than 8 points or 7 points or 6 points, she was probably not going to be able to stick around. 8 points was a question. Anything over 10, she was golden. She got 10. I got Doug Sovereign and Sean Meehan on the line to help talk about this. Let's say Sona Vista to Sean Meehan.
Sona Vista, my
and
friend.
Sona Vista to Doug Sovereign of KCBS.
Sona Vista.
So is this an exciting time for you, Mr. Doug?
Oh, I'm just, you know, exuding joy with every step. No, yeah, no, it's fun. It's interesting. It's great. You know, I mean, it's fascinating. I was really rooting for Hillary so that the race would continue a couple more weeks, mainly because I'm going to North Carolina to cover that primary, and no one would care if she had lost Pennsylvania. So I was happy to see her win. I've got it at 9 points now. It's tightened a little bit. It's like 9.2 or something. And I was not one of those people who thought, oh, she must win by 10. I figured, she'll win by 5, 6, 7, 8. That's good enough. I mean, no matter what, as long as she won, she'd be happy. And in reality, she only cut about a dozen delegates off as a lead anyway. So, yeah, I guess it's a psychological thing for her to get at least up to 9 or 10, and she did that. So
The fact that you, as a journalist, as a professional, are interested in seeing the race continue because it makes for a more interesting storyline, compared to you as an American who may be seeing the dissolution of our democracy in the process, do you find yourself conflicted? Mark Kondracki.
Not at all. only in this one case. I mean, I do think it's I don't think it's... Some people think, oh, it's dragged on, it should be over. I mean, why? Why does it have to end in January? Then it's boring for 10 months. No, I'm glad it went a little while. I just assumed it'd be wrapped up. But, yeah, for the purely selfish point of view that I was not going to get to go to Pennsylvania, and I do get to go to the next round, and I've already made my travel arrangements, I wanted it to continue.
That's all that really matters. Sean, have you been paying attention to this? You have. We haven't had a chance to talk about this yet.
I have, and... I personally, as an American, I'm very excited, and I'll tell you why. Robin, you remember months and months ago when this whole thing began, I told you that there is not enough muscularity in America's position on terrorism and regimes we don't care for abroad. We are not projecting enough power. And now, I think, finally, Hill had me for a while. When she said that she wouldn't take nuclear weapons off the table, I thought outstanding. But the other day, when she responded that we would aid Israel in a nuclear crisis with Iran, by obliterating Iran, that sealed the deal for me right there. I thought, this is the kind of apocalyptic foreign policy I'm looking for in a candidate. No one has had the balls to come out yet and just say, we are ready to nuke. And that's very exciting for me.
Bush was too timid for you, I guess.
You know, McCain looks like a panty waist. Bush, what lesson did Bush not learn from Iraq? He's out trying to court the people to try to get us to attack Iran. He's trying to, you know, when he floats some statement and then some critical leak document refutes his statement, his pronouncement that Iran is behind the JFK assassination and behind the salmonella poisonings and what have you from various farms in America, when information is leaked that disputes that, he rolls over. We need a candidate who I think is going to just go on a global jihad. You know, let's not laugh. Let's remember Machiavelli. It is better to be feared than loved. And I tell you, once we start nuking, we are going to be feared, and I think ultimately loved, because everybody likes to snuggle up to, a nuclear power.
Although, a nice warm fire at night.
Love is highly overrated, so...
It is. You know,
I want to say, I don't like to have nuclear weapons on the table because then my food gets irradiated, and I'm kind of an organic guy. So
I see.
I like to keep the nuclear weapons out back in a shed, is what I like to do.
I hear that the food keeps longer.
It does.
That's what the nuclear industry told me.
And it tastes great in all three of your mouths. So, did she do things and say things in Pennsylvania that have materially altered the race going forward? I mean, the fact that she made this particular comment, I suppose on one hand you could chalk it up to the fact that she's just kind of tired. And to my eyes, by the way, she looks tired. It looks like this is getting too hard. Do you get that sense?
She didn't look so good yesterday. I noticed that her face was a little puffy. I don't think she did or said anything that fundamentally alters the race. Now, I think all that happens now is she's got two more weeks. She's bought some more time. She's, you know, literally buying some more time as millions of dollars roll in on the internet. She's got to win a couple more. But, you know, she's never going to quit. I mean, in 2016, she'll still be, you know, running for this nomination. Indiana, North Carolina, she's got to win both of those. And if she doesn't, it's over. But I don't think she'll quit anyway, even if she loses them. But I don't think anything fundamentally changes. I think some people are, you know, their doubts about Obama are deepening a little bit as they worry about November and, oh my gosh, the Reagan Democrats and McCain's going to whoop us and maybe we should go with Hillary. And, you know, more and more people are starting to have those little nagging questions about him. But I don't think anything, I think all that's happened is it's extended a couple weeks.
And he has not been able to shake loose any of the older white female voters.
Which is surprising because he's such a handsome young man.
It is. I mean, I have this little sound clip of Barack asking his advisors.
Hey, where are the white women at?
There you go.
but my feeling is, all right, some of those people are going to go with McCain anyway in November. And also, all this talk about, she's winning the big states, he can't win the big states. I mean, the people who are helping her win those big states, if they're Democrats, 80% of them are going to vote for Obama if he's the nominee, and some of them will end up going to McCain, and I think more Republicans are likely to vote for Obama than Clinton. I mean, I think it's dangerous to extrapolate from primaries and say, oh, but in November, I mean, just somebody's got to win the Democratic primary in each state. It doesn't mean that person's more or less likely to carry that state in November, I don't think.
Now, the talking point, I'm curious about the process, sort of, you know, behind the scenes, so to speak. Yesterday, what I heard, because I watch all of these shows, as I'm sure you do, all the talking head shows. I am. I'm a complete political junkie. Last night was Nirvana for me. The Giants were playing Arizona with Zito pitching, so that was a guaranteed kind of
pitching.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a bloodlust right there. And the Sharks were in the semifinals and or the quarterfinals, and we've got politics. So I was, you know, with the pizza, I was content. I didn't need.
And I
love.
Was on a flight from Zihuatanejo, Mexico, back to the Bay Area, so I didn't get to see any of that. But I was quite happy anyway.
But I heard Pat Buchanan say yesterday, but I must have heard then 100 other people say it as well, is that he can't close the deal, and that's sort of the phrase that's been, you know, that's the phrase that pays today.
Mm-hmm.
How does that get started? How does it get picked up? Is it something that you hear and suddenly you put it into your reports? Are there really talking point memos that go around to people?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hear things like that and put them in my reports.
No,
some reporters are lazy and they hear something and they just repeat it. Oh, yeah, this is what everyone's saying. I'll say it, too. So there is sort of an echo chamber effect. But, yeah, they send out memos. I mean, I get one pretty much every day from the Obama campaign manager. I call him David Plouf. I think it's actually Pluff, but I like to call him Plouf. But he sends out a memo every day, and we used to get them from Mark Penn, no more on Hillary's behalf. But they all send out memos saying, you know, this is what really happened, and this is what we think it means, and they hold conference calls, and they do. And people pick up those points because they got to fill all that airtime for people who are watching like you. And they do sort of repeat the same things because they don't have any original ideas. And that does happen. I don't think, you know, he can't seal the deal. He was sealing it just fine in January and February. He hasn't really won anywhere big in 2 months, though. I think it's more that the more people get to know him, the less they feel they do know him. And part of the problem is, you know, people want change, but people are starting to plant seeds of fear about Obama the way Bush did about Kerry, where people said, oh, I don't know, I'm scared, we can't go with Kerry. Isn't he French or something? Now they're saying, well, I don't know, I want change, but do I want that much change? He's black, he's got a funny name, maybe a woman's good enough. I mean, they're managed to, both the Republicans and the Clinton campaign have managed to scare people a little bit about Obama, where they still think he doesn't like the Pledge of Allegiance and he won't wear a flag pin, and who knows where his allegiances really lie. And
well,
enough
so I that heard he laughed and danced on September 11th. That's just what I heard.
Well, you know, I heard Russert say that he refused to pledge allegiance, and I've seen that video that they're
Russert
talking about.
Say that?
I heard Russert say that when he was running down all of these
right,
charges
right.
against him, and of course, that was not the case. He did not put his hand over his heart during the Star Spangled Banner, which
the national anthem,
right? Which I don't do either at a ball game. I stand there. I don't have a baseball cap, so I don't. I just stand there in respect. I put my hand over my heart for the Pledge of Allegiance, though, but. What
were you marrying homosexuals at that time? Because that's what he was doing during the Pledge of Allegiance.
I was having sex with dogs, if Rick Santorum is listening. But it seems to me that what this is pointing out is that the American populace is so either fickle or short attention that the nature and the tenor of the campaign can change in a week-by-week basis, which means that American politics becomes much like football. On any given Sunday, any of the three candidates can ultimately win, and that scares the hell out of me.
I think you're probably right, and people are fickle. They have short attention spans. They have short memories. They're gullible. They're subject to the latest thing they hear. Oh, I don't know. They go back and forth. And it is like, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of a good football analogy, any given Sunday. Okay, so Barack Obama is kind of like the Chicago Bears, and Hillary Clinton is, who's Hillary Clinton? Can you help me out here? McCain is the Arizona Cardinals, and they suck.
I'm going with Refrigerator Perry. I don't know.
There
I just That's the first
she's,
thing that comes to
She's Refrigerator Perry? She's more like Bronco Nagurski, I think.
Sean, you're the NFL giant.
He's Dale Sayers. He's the Kansas Storm.
Hey, I am just loving listening to these assessments. I see John McCain as Bobby Knight, but I got to go to another sport for that. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, he's cranky temper, you know, kind of
hot around the collar.
And the pandering that goes on, they all appeared on American Idol. They all appeared on WWE. They all made appearances. It's almost like, I mean, poor Patty Chayefsky, because...
Yeah.
Don't you really
wish... live to see this.
Oh, man! I hope somebody's telling him.
It would just disappoint him how he undershot the mark.
True. Didn't go far enough.
So
well,
I'm
not telling him
I...
it's not going to take it anymore. That's how I feel about it.
so you're. I'm sorry.
That
go ahead.
Cheap. Sorry.
Oh, it's all right. I was just saying one thing that I think has emerged out of the last month is that Clinton has finally gotten traction. I think on a negative narrative of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Clinton narrative is a long time narrative, the negative narrative for Clinton. She's manipulative, she's power hungry, and she's a pathological liar. I think that is something that has been with her for a decade, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Obama had not really been encumbered. He hadn't been yoked with the negative campaign, with the negative narrative. There was a lot of things didn't quite work. They seemed amateurish, you know, Obama's name, you know, that he was the sort of Republican confusion and the Fox News, constantly putting up his middle name. And these things, they seemed ham-fisted and inauthentic. But I think Hillary has now kind of created this radical, perhaps radical sympathizing guy who is not really very American. He's elite, which means he's intellectual, which means he's out of touch. And, you know, he's probably much more comfortable in a room with Noam Chomsky than he is at a Bobby Knight basketball game, you know.
And he bowled a 37, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I think you just nailed it. I think you really did. And part of the problem for Obama is that if he could have wrapped it up in January or February, there wouldn't have been an opportunity for anyone to frame him in this negative way until it was the Republicans and John McCain, and no one would take that quite as seriously as if it's coming from the Democrats. So, I mean, you have to get out in front. You can't allow your opponent to find you negatively. That's rule one in politics, and that is what is happening to him, and it's coming from two fronts. And so by the time he is the nominee, assuming he is, people will have an opinion in their mind of him, and it won't be a positive one. And the luster's been worn off of him.
Doug, I know you need to run. It is sovereignnation.blogspot.com. You were threatening to put some more tunage up there?
I got a new one. It aired Friday, and it's on the website now.
Outstanding.
You have to go to the sovereignnation.com mothership homepage to find the song. It's Hit Me With Your Best Shot, and it covers... snipers in Bosnia and shots of whiskey and bitter voters with guns, you name it, it's all in there. Three verses, I got it all.
Crown Royale with cheese.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you're going to North Carolina?
I'll be covering North Carolina as opposed to Indiana. Indiana's the better race, but my sister lives in Charlotte, so I'm going for that one.
He's kind of the Bay Area Chris Matthews. Doug Sovereign of KCBS. Doug, thank you so very much. I know you need to run. I really appreciate you joining us and giving us a little insight here at the last minute.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll talk to you again.
As always.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Dad.
All right, we'll take a break. Sean, you can hang around?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, very good. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. I have no idea where we are in the actual clock of the show, but it doesn't really matter because it's magic. Stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Everything I know, I know, I know, I know. Everything I know, I know, I know, I know. White skies in every direction. I close my eyes and see the perfection. A lesson about love and attention. Caressing my belly, my deepest attentions. Erase my meanest aggressions. My in-depth obsessions. My strength for confusing, abusing. Tough-mindedness and tender heart. Nevertheless, I can't forget my part. It's hard, but like a dart, I'll stay on course. Of course, it isn't easy, but for me, doesn't please me either, so I'll just do the best I can. Well, everything I know.
this has been your orientation. Is there anything you do not understand? Is there anything you understand only partially? If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. We are still an unknown amount of time into this 67th show, Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, I am your host, buddy, and pal, a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian attorney boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pound attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. You should have heard a song from Lisa Parade. All the music today is from Lisa Parade. At least that's what I'm planning on inserting, so it'll all make sense down the road. Hopefully on the phone, if I didn't lose him, is my good friend, Sean Meehan, Son of Easter. Welcome back.
Son of Easter.
So we missed you. First of all, I didn't have a chance to do this already. I wanted to apologize. The last time we did a show, which was a couple of weeks ago, you called in and we had started the show a little bit early, and I was a complete dick to you. And to comedic effect, I appreciate it was to comedic effect, but nevertheless, I realized almost instantaneously, or at least when Parviz pointed it out, that I was just a complete and total dick to you, and so I wanted to apologize to you personally.
Well, you are a fine person, and all animus has been put to bed.
Thanks. And I was thinking about it because it actually did bother me. I mean, I was cranky. I think at that point, I was feeling a lot of stress because we had Cyril Vitomsky on. Cyril had a very tight time schedule, much like Doug, but it required that we move things around and people's schedules were delayed, you know, as life will be sometimes. And it occurred to me that afterwards, I thought to myself, God, especially because of what's been happening in Tibet and China, I go, well, I bet the Dalai Lama doesn't get pissed about this kind of stuff.
Oh, you should see him.
Well,
And
then it occurred to me, like, supposing the Dalai Lama wanted some clam chowder and they brought him the wrong kind. It's like, fuck, I wanted New England clam chowder. You know, I mean, how hard is it to get a little bit of cream, a little bit of potato? God damn, nobody gets fucking Manhattan, you know, like maybe the...
Get this red shit off.
Maybe that's his point. Maybe the Dalai Lama has a pressure point, you know, and that's it. It's New England clam chowder. Who knows? So I want to apologize on behalf of the Dalai Lama for the New York Manhattan style clam chowder.
Oh, I love that chowder.
Oh, God. I understand Doug's position, and obviously he's been through a lot of elections as a reporter. And so there is a sense of, you know, thy will be done, right? And this has its own process. But it feels to me like we are now, you know, damaging Obama in a way that he will no longer have that new car smell. And yeah, we may get him for a little bit less, you know, and he'll still run, you know. But kind of once a car has been in a major collision, it never quite drives right. And I'm wondering whether, you know, you sort of think about what happens in post-traumatic stress, and that there are people that never recover from it. And does what's happening to him qualify as the kind of stress which will basically change him forever in a way that doesn't help the country?
Well, I think these are very fascinating questions, and I was going to say it disturbs me that no one's asking them. I do think that people are, but I guess this is what it comes down to for me. And as people who listen to this podcast well know, I am not a Hillary Clinton fan, and that is not of late. That is basically her entire time in the U.S. Senate, I have found pretty reprehensible. But I guess I am so cynical now that I'm not sure that this isn't her plan. I mean, we've talked about this, I think, you know, sort of in private before, that is this strategy, this ongoing slugfest with Obama, really about damaging Obama so badly that McCain wins the election, and she can run again. Because she's 60 years old, she's not going to be a 68-year-old woman running for president.
By the way, I just want to throw something out there. I've been listening to Imus in the Morning. It was a U.S. talk
Racist.
Host. Yeah, I know, but I've been listening to him anyhow. And he's been saying that if the Pope is not too old to be the Pope at 81, then John McCain is not too old to be president at 71. And I was bothered me because I've heard him say this for days and days, and I realized that there was a fault in the logic, and I eventually figured out what it was. And what he really means to say is if the Pope isn't too old to be Pope at 81, then John McCain isn't too old to be Pope at 71. But we don't know.
And I've said that for years.
But we don't know anything about what it
is. have always acknowledged that John McCain would make an excellent pope. He's not too old.
Vibrant? Vibrant?
I mean, you know,
looks good in red Prada shoes.
Stack him up against John Paul II. And let's see, you know, those final years, I give him the final decade of John Paul II. McCain would eat him for lunch. He'd have him down. He'd be hitting him with a folding chair. It would be over for him. And he was still Pope, apparently effective in the role. McCain could do it for decades. He gets good medical care, too.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, though. You were talking about the affect.
Just my concern is that Hillary sees this as not her last opportunity, but I suspect she sees it as her next to last opportunity to have a realistic go at the presidency. And clearly, you know, we saw how disastrous 1980 was when the Democratic Party was divided against a sitting president. When Ted Kennedy ran for president, he was sort of drafted as an alternative to the failing Carter administration at that time. And he posed a real challenge, and it divided the party, and there were all kinds of issues. And I think that the party has a great enough memory to recall we don't want to do that again. Even if Obama is a struggling president, we don't want to put the party through that again. So he can't win this time. He cannot win. I think Hillary Clinton is frankly mad with power. I think she's nuts. And I think that
wow.
The vacillations in her positions, the bizarre changes of personae, I mean, she's got a bag full of masks, you know? And she draws them out with incredible ease. And I think she's nuts. I'll just be honest. I'm done with her. I mean, I think she's certifiable.
And yet she may very well become president. I am not convinced that Obama will be the Democratic nominee at this point.
I am not either.
And
I find that very disheartening. But there's part of me that also says, you know, if she wants to be president so bad, just let her.
Well...
Let her screw up the country, and then...
I know, but, you know, we didn't have a chance to talk about it today, but, I mean, there are food crises around the world at this point. I mean, if you read anything published outside of the United States, you realize that it looks like we're just beginning to see little hints of Armageddon.
Yeah.
On the horizon. The fact that energy prices are going through the roof, the fact that there have been, shortages of staples such as rice and corn and flour, you know, staple grains, those are the kind of things that cause wars a lot more than ideology. Hungry people go to war a lot faster than people of a particular ideology.
Yeah, particularly those who wear flag pins. But... I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think people realize, I listen to a program here in America, and you can get it abroad, called Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. And one of the things that I have found watching Democracy Now!, democracynow.com, is that you are exposed to events around the world that even if you read the New York Times and get their world section, maybe, you know, a couple of paragraphs on, you know, a revolution in Zimbabwe, a massive change in leadership in Colombia, or you know, these are extraordinary things. And there really is a sense of mounting tensions over some really primal issues.
Yes. And the aliens have come over Arizona and over Florida, unexplained formations of lights. So,
well, I haven't been checking in with George Norrie lately, but I realize I need to do that now.
It's one other thing to do. All right. So I wanted to thank you for joining us today. I know that you were not able to make it over here. Hopefully next week?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah?
I'm definitely going to try.
All right. Very good. What we're going to do at this point is we'll take another break. We'll play some more tunes. I'm going to get Lisa Parade on the phone. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Robin. I will talk to you soon and hopefully be on the air in the studio next week.
All right. Much love to you. Much love to Michelle. Send my best.
Absolutely.
All right.
Bye-bye, my friend.
Bye-bye. All right. We'll take another break. We'll play another song from Lisa Parade, or perhaps the Lisa Parade, or perhaps Parade. This is something that I am not clear about, so I will ask her when I get her on the phone. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, in the studio, all by myself, inviting you to please stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
This song's for the ladies, Fred and Count, so do her.
even flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're once again some unknown number of minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal. Straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian attorney boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman fat attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning saying welcome back. And son of Easter to nobody. There is nobody in the studio. I'm looking at two empty chairs. Where Sherry should be is no one. Where Parviz should be is no one. With Parviz, it's much harder to tell. With Sherry, very easy. Anyhow, I mentioned during, I think on the blog last week, and we've talked about it before with Jason Athenson, that I am a huge fan, as we all are, of many of these situation comedies. You know, frequently lament the state of situation comedy here in the United States, but I continue to entertain and consume and partake of pretty much everything that's out there. And ABC, much to their credit, continues to try interesting and unusual things. And they put together this vehicle, I guess, for Judy Greer and Chris Parnell, who used to be on Saturday Night Live, called Misguided. And I think because of the writer's strike, it probably got a little more play than it otherwise would have. And it's had a chance to stick around and get some legs underneath it. And looks like it's fairly solid at this point. And one of the nice things is that, you know, I have closed captioning on in the background so I can do other things while I'm working out and taking care of stuff. And I was just fascinated by the theme music. And we talked about that on the show as well, how theme songs for television shows have been, you know, over the history of television here in the United States, certainly have been of paramount importance. You know, who among us cannot sing the lyrics to Gilligan's Island or the Beverly Hillbillies or know that Mike Post song from the Rockford Files? And so I was very interested. Obviously, right now we've got Bare Naked Ladies doing the theme for what's it called? That Chuck Lorre thing, the Big Bang Theory, and what have you. So I was very fascinated. And after this very kind of infectious, wonderful, don't play a lot of it on the show, but just really wonderful, musical, interesting. And so I kind of backed it up, and thank God once again for closed captioning, because my TiVo insists on cutting off the last 30 seconds of the show, but it did give me the first 30 seconds, and I was able to see that the music, the song, was called Beautiful Possibility and performed by the Lisa Parade. I went out onto the internet. I was able to find Lisa Parade, and on our phone right now is Lisa Parade. Let's say son of Easton, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Thanks, Robin.
Let's see. The website gives an incredible amount of information. It is www.loverparade.com, and you're also over on MySpace. Yep. Lisa P. was born in Quincy, Massachusetts, and grew up in lots of places around the United States, finally ending up back in Boston. She comes from a rich musical background, starting with saxophone in the fourth grade, the amazing Roma band in high school, and a family who still play music all the time. And she lists as among her numerous, shall I say, influences, are The Police, Sublime, Suzanne Vega, Schoolhouse Rock, Louis Armstrong, The Ramones, Alanis Morissette, and Radiohead, The Hoots, The Roots again, Rage Against the Machine, Howard Stern, John Philip Sousa, Charlie Mingus, Peter Gabriel, Django Reinhardt, Peter Brady, Captain Kirk, parents, forefathers, and mothers. The only thing that's missing, I'm so sorry to say, is me.
Schnauzer Logic.
And so with that kind of a lineage, how could I not want to have you on? The first thing I have to ask you, you said, am I going to ask you questions? I always have lots of questions. The first thing I have to ask you is it Lisa Parade or The Lisa Parade?
Well, I'm Lisa Parade, and the band is The Lisa Parade.
Ah, okay.
So, and it's kind of like a collection of people that come and go. Right now, the band is totally rocking, but it's this inclusive situation where people sit in a lot, and the live show is... it just feels like a parade, and my name's Lisa Parade, so it works out perfectly.
I see. So people
it becomes a noun instead of just my name.
So you can find Parade some music from Parade. The album was out of the Fun Box, and that's on iTunes under Parade.
Yeah.
And then you've got some stuff under your name, first name, and The Lisa Parade. All right. Well, it's out there for people to find, and people are finding it. By the way, were you surprised that that doing this bit of theme music for a television show sort of got the kind of bump that you're seeing?
I mean, I guess I was not that surprised, because after we got asked to do it, everybody was saying to me, this is really big, this is really big. And it turns out it's very, very cool, and it's bringing a lot of exposure to us, and on our, like, a lot of hits on YouTube and a lot of hits on the site and a lot of new friends and just a lot of excitement and energy around the music. And it's been amazing. Am I surprised? Not really, because, you know, I always think of the Friends theme, and I think about Michael Skloff and that and what happened from just that little song. But, you know, that certainly hasn't happened with this song, but it's, you know, that's the possibility.
Well, you haven't gotten the Schnauzer Logic bump yet, but don't,
yeah.
And by the way, don't hold your breath. So what is the process? It's clear that you have been a professional musician for a long time with a long lineage of performing in a number of different groups. You're multi-talented on sax and drums, and I'm guessing there are very few things that you don't play. How do you go from being a talented local musician, and then obviously being in L.A., and then sort of have a song that looks like probably was you originally recorded back in 2002, be on a 2008 sitcom?
No, that song, Beautiful Possibility, is a little, it was like 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, but how do we do, well, you know, it's, I always, the way I've always worked is introspectively, and even in bands like that I've worked with, I find when I look inward towards the music, it eventually, like, the energy explodes and goes somewhere, and it may go to other, even if it's something like the other band members wanting to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in L.A. where, you know, most of my time I spend in the studio, you know, creating and arranging and all that, and
right.
then I create this really cool thing that I've been obsessing about in my pajamas for 3 days, and then next thing you know, it takes on a life of its own,
right.
and people want to be a part of it, and then so we play a live show, and then people want the music, and then depending on who hears the music, and like it's just about, I send all these things in the universe all the time,
right.
and then once in a while, something comes back, and that was one of the things that came back, and it's just, it's really exciting, and what that does is just leads to more things.
which is what people who are friends of mine who are creative and performers all the time, what they say to each other really to help them keep going is you just have to keep performing. You have to keep creating. You have to keep doing what you're doing because you never know who's going to hear it. Was it someone who came to one of your shows and heard this and said, hey, this would be great? Did you know the producer, or did someone sort of act as your intermediary? Because
it was just one of these things where the guitar player that my guitar player Brucey, he's been playing with me since the beginning of even Parade. He and I have really were the founding people of Parade. And it was one of his students, his guitar students, his friend was looking for music, and the student really liked, you know, it was just one of those things, those total spontaneous things that happen every day. You just never know when it's going to happen. And you just never know, you know, I keep making music, and then when I get the phone call for something like that, I have something to hand them. You know, like right now, I've been really working hard to finish because I got, you know, all these other opportunities are coming because of Misguided.
Sure.
I'm getting more calls. So when people call me, I'm ready with the CD. Like within 1 hour, I can give them something that represents us and something new after that. And just constantly being ready for that moment if it happens.
And no. your music is, I think, very hard to pin down. I mean, looking through the listing of folks that were an influence, it's not surprising to me that it really runs the gamut. And first of all, I think it's lovely that you use terms like Renaissance and apparently, I'm guessing, augmented fifth. I mean, is that what that sax is there? Because there's this wonderful kind of I don't know, complexity, I think, to what you're doing, along with the simplicity of the melody. It's infectious. And I spent time reading through the comments, and they're sort of consistent. People find your music, and then they find that they're attracted to the music, and then it has this kind of infectious quality to it. But I don't know how I would categorize it one to the other. Do you find that you move through phases in your creativity, or, like, you know, you were in a rap phase, and then you're in a ballad phase, or pretty much whatever comes to you? What's that process like?
Well, I think, like you said, it's a collection of all these experiences I've had that, you know, I've been very zen about, you know, like, you know, being in the Roma band in Boston. It was an Italian marching band, and I remember marching through the streets and wanting, you know, some water, and all the others wine, and I'm totally thirsty and just, you know, dreading being there. But in the end, you know, I have this part of me that it becomes part of my music, this music, and it's like that all along, and I'm constantly listening, and I'm also a teacher. I teach at a school, I teach 60%. I'm a music teacher. And the students are always introducing me to new and inventive music. And it just, I'm always looking for something new and cool. You know, that's all. I don't know. I think it's just, you know, I'm a sap for a folky, for a folk song.
Uh-huh.
I love folk music. But then again, like, I listen to, like I said, The Roots a lot. I'm a big fan of Things Fall Apart. That album is just probably one of my favorite of all times. And then I'm a huge John Coltrane fan. So then you hear that in Beautiful Possibility. And then, you know, at the same time, I'm kind of a, you know, I like 80s pop songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Andrew Gold, you know, thank you for being a friend. You know, songs like that, too. But the thing about it is, the music for me has always been, it has to be inclusive. You know, if the music doesn't feel inclusive to me, I'm really not into it. And that's, hence the Lisa Parade. It has like a, you know, I just feel like it's all good. That's how I approach art in general, like life, really.
All right.
It's all good, and it is what it is, and I just try to capitalize on what's in front of me at the time. And sometimes I'm into The Roots a lot. Sometimes I'm into something new. Like, I'm in this band right now, The Deer Hunter. They're a young band, but they're just really inventive. And, you know, obviously all the instruments I play, I always want to add cool instruments. I'm kind of a geek, a band geek. You know, I was in high school band for years, and I loved it, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Well, you shouldn't be, and God bless you for being a music teacher now. I mean, I was, you know, a band geek myself, played in a marching band. I actually wound up taking tenor sax so that I could play in a jazz band, because they didn't need a clarinetist, but they needed a sax player, and the instructor locked me in the band music closet with a tenor saxophone and said, "Teach yourself. You should be able to figure this out." And I've been sort of, you know, I could make it honk in the appropriate places for a marching band and for a jazz band. So I admire that. Does the state of where we are now in terms of the technology distribution, I was reading an article today in Rolling Stone that's talking about, you know, some of the more successful acts like Smashing Pumpkins deciding that they don't want to be wrapped up in the record companies. You would share it, I think, that in your own professional career, you'd come out to LA with one band, the record company had changed, you know, people yep. inside, the personnel changed, and suddenly, you know, what was hot is not, and vice versa. Do you find that you've got the ability to reach as many more people using YouTube and the internet and CDs and MP3s, and is that sort of part of the creative process as well? Do you think about that going into this?
Well, I think, like, with the record companies for a while now, the record companies have been a crapshoot. So if they decide they want to make you huge, they really do have the power to do that. But most of the bands that are signed sit, you know, they don't really get that opportunity to be really have a crew of people that can are really organized enough to get the product off the ground, you know. And now, of course, we know all these record companies are folding and everything. And is it better for me? Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in my early 30s, and it's easier. It's better for me because, you know, a major label 10 years ago wouldn't have signed a 30 or 33-year-old person. That's
right.
Beyond. And now it's, I don't know if they would now, but if someone came to me and that had the power and money and organization to move my music around, I'm not saying I would never do that, but the way it is now, it's really working well for me because just all the different opportunities that are out there, like you said, like MySpace, and even these, like, these virtual reality sites, you know?
Have oh,
you,
sure. Second
you know,
Life
like
kind
Sonic,
of things?
With a Second Life
Second
and things
Life,
like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like I said, MySpace. And we get on a theme show and people know how to find you right away.
Right.
And then if your ducks are in a row, you're selling a lot of records. If, like I said, when that phone rings or when that show is on TV and your ducks are in a row, you can really take advantage of opportunities.
We're talking to Lisa Parade. She is the author, singer, guiding force behind The Lisa Parade, and she's over on MySpace.com. Is it Lisa Parade?
It's MySpace.com/LoveAParade.
Love a Parade, and yeah. LoveAParade.com is the website, and music is available over on iTunes and Rhapsody, and you guys have been hearing it throughout the show today. At least you will be when I go back and put it back in, because we're doing the show out of order today, but don't tell anyone, because it's our little secret, and which is fine. Now, did you know, have you had a chance to go down and see, you know, the taping of Misguided? And the other thing that I always have, you asked if I had questions. I have too many questions.
Yeah.
Is they try to clearly match the musical cues throughout the rest of the show to the tenor, if you will, of Beautiful Possibility. But I'm guessing you don't write that other incidental stuff, or do you?
No, I don't. They just heard the theme, the song, and they wanted it as a theme. So I did everything. I gave them a TV mix, and they really took it from there. They were very cool. The people at Fox Music were very cool to me, and it was real simple. And I don't have anything to do with the rest of the music, though. They probably have writers, because that way they don't have to, they don't have to pay. They just pay their staff writers probably.
Right.
Instead of all the royalties and copyrights and all that kind of thing.
All right, have you had a chance to watch any of the tapings, or you just enjoy it on the tube like the rest of us?
Nope, I just watch it on TV. I TiVo too.
and you go. I did that.
The first day when they had it on, because I hadn't talked to anybody over there in a while. It didn't come on until about 5 minutes into the show, and
right.
I was so worried because everyone was watching it, expecting it to come on, all our fans and everything. And then finally it came on. I was so relieved.
it has
5 seconds of it too. It's not much, but it's
No, and I was surprised because when I went to loveaparade.com and I listened to the whole thing, it's a rap.
Yeah.
But it's really poetry, and I'm not just saying that to kind of blow smoke. I mean that. I printed out the lyrics to read them, and there's these wonderful allusions. And the question, obviously, from people who are singer songwriters is what comes first, the music or the lyrics? And I'm guessing for you it depends. But on Beautiful Possibility, which came first?
The saxophones came first.
Okay.
And then I wrote a chorus that. It was okay, and then I just worked with it, and then the chorus came, and then I started writing. I was, politically, I've been upset like everybody else, and I just needed a place to vent that, and I'm upset, but yet I'm pretty, I wake up pretty optimistic pretty much every day, and so I really believe that that change is possible, and, if as long as people just get their priorities straight, it's like when you think about it, we're all a miracle. It's a miracle that we're even here, and then we get so nitpicky, I mean, I don't mean nitpicky like it doesn't matter, but
no.
I mean, when you really think about the big picture, if everyone could just put their guns down and put their arms down a little bit, I think things would be a lot easier to sort out, that's all.
The chorus is, and it's about time we had a renaissance, probably
yeah.
the first time ever that the word renaissance appeared in a rap song, so
yeah.
yay you!
Thank you.
It's about time we had a renaissance that made the headlines to remind us that we're just a possibility of infinity, or we're beautiful, we're just a beautiful possibility. I mean, I gotta tell you, make me a little weepy.
Oh,
it did. It made me a little weepy. There's something that's tremendously hopeful through that process. Now, you also have been involved, I know, at one point in Rock the Vote and trying to get folks out, and clearly are hopeful about this. I remember, I'm obviously much older than you are, and I remember, when I was coming of age in the late 60s and early 70s, that music had a more profound impact on the political process. Obviously there were fewer outlets for music. You listened to the radio, but, Neil Young and Bob Dylan and, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I mean, there was lots of messages in the music that were getting out there. I don't know that stuff is getting airplay. Do you have a sense that it's being sort of written and performed, but not getting airplay, or people just aren't interested in writing that kind of music?
I think people are very interested in writing that kind of music, and I do think there's some things out there that are really popular right now that are political. Like I think about the Dixie Chicks. That whole, did you see that movie Shut Up and Sing? I mean that there you go. And there's also a lot in the Will I Am thing for the Barack Obama campaign.
Yep,
there was that, and I think that. When I think of Bob Dylan, though, it goes back to the process of writing it. And when you think of Bob Dylan or Neil Young, you think of introspective musicians that are really expressing how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we live in a time where, there's a lot more, instead of, having artists that are just being expressive, there's more people trying to write songs that are political. Do you know what I'm saying? So instead of an expression, it becomes you're putting things together instead of expressing. I don't know how to explain it.
So
if someone said to you, Robin, can you write us a political song for us? Instead of you just doing what you do, and it's you expressing yourself.
I got you. Okay, I understand.
And I think it's different, and I think people feel it, and they can feel the difference in this we've been living in this real manufactured music time, and we're just coming out of it now, I feel, with the collapse of the way things have been all these years with the music industry.
Well, your stuff is giving me hope. The stuff that I hear over on PodSafe Music gives me hope. The stuff that I hear on GarageBand.com gives me hope. I mean, there are people out there that are creating, and their music is being heard. My perspective is the human soul always wants to create. So if you give the tools for creativity to a greater number of people and you allow them to soothe their own souls and put that kind of life into the universe, yeah, that's fine. I mean, everybody has, you know, GarageBand and iTunes and a 4-track and, you know, a cheap microphone, and they're able to do their own thing. More doesn't necessarily mean better. Where are you hearing the stuff that you like?
Well, I'm hearing it through my students and from my. I have a stepson; he's 18, and I'm there. They know I'm always looking for new things, and it's hard though. You know, it's definitely hard. Like, there's bands that come along that I just grab onto, and there's others that I hear it and I think it sounds cool and everything, but I don't listen to it again. You know, but there's things I become obsessed with. Like right now, this band, The Deer Hunter. I think it's one person, and he has a band. And I love that. And then there's just a lot of things. But I do find myself going back to a lot of old records, definitely a lot. Plus, you know, you go on MySpace or you go to iTunes and you hit, you know, if you like this, you'll like this. And
right.
You go to that and I find that. But it's just because the way it is, there's so much information because of all the technology that it's hard to sift through things. You know, it's hard to have things without being force-fed, you know.
No, I do, I'm sort of, I don't mean to let you just kind of linger there. I think that the difficulty in expressing the idea really comes from part of the problem of understanding, you know, the goodness of the ability to get all of this versus the, you know, ability for artists to be able to support what they're trying to do, continue to make these continue to create. How, the nature to which, or the extent to which, it is a reflection of the society we live in, right? Which is really what all art ultimately becomes about.
Uh-huh.
It's the experience of the artist within their society, their life, their
uh-huh.
family, their home, their work, their love, all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, makes no sense. I'm just talking.
No, it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree.
Well,
to agree.
That's safe. We're talking to Lisa Parade. Lisa, I have kept you for a half an hour, which is like longer than I said I was going to. So I wanted to thank you so very much for talking to us today. It is myspace.com/loverparade or loverparade.com. I also know that you are, for folks who are down in the Southland, you now have a regular gig at the Cafe Bellissimo?
Yes, we do. A residency every 2 weeks, this Friday night. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
We actually have lots of friends and family down in Los Angeles, and so Woodland Hills is not very complicated. When you say they serve hookah, you mean the kind of the smoke?
Yeah.
Is that right?
They serve like all these flavored hookahs,
oh.
And people hang out. I guess it's the newest rage. I tried it last time I was there. It was fun.
That's very retro. That's very, very retro. Cool. Well, listen, thank you so very much. Obviously, you know, whatever we can do to support you, we invite all of our listeners to, you know, go over to iTunes and purchase all the music and subscribe over on the MySpace Friends page and find out. You're obviously working on new stuff right now. You had sent me a bunch of things.
Yep.
What do you think people should hear today? Because I'm going to have a chance to put the music in after the fact. So what would you recommend?
Oh.
I'll make sure we get to hear those things.
Oh, I'm like, I don't know. Like, there's a beautiful possibility, of course.
Yep.
And then there's... the new one that I just did, and it was like talking about the creative process. It was just like a guitar and a banjo one day, and it was like 3 hours, and we did this thing, and I just love it. And it's called "I Don't Believe What You Say."
Okay,
it's a really simple, simple song.
All right.
I also like this. I don't know. Everything I gave you, those are good.
Did
I give you the beginning of the world?
Did you give me the beginning of the world? I'm looking here. Beautiful Possibility, Talk Loud, I Don't Believe What You Say, which we're going to play actually when we exit this particular break, so people can hear that one. Girl Can't Speak, It's Almost Time, Everything I Know, Grace, What You're Gonna Do, and Maybe She's Afraid. A nice little collection of tunes, by the way.
I don't know. Grace is good.
Well, they're all good.
Yeah.
okay.
Girl's pretty cool.
All right.
Let me see. Oh, and also, It's Almost Time is good. That's got clarinet. You can hear my true band geekness when you put that one on.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll play I Don't Believe What You
I Don't Believe What You Say.
I Don't Believe What You Say. We'll play that coming out of this break, and then the next break we'll play It's Almost Time.
All right then, Robin.
Wonderful. Listen, so thank you so very much. I know that there's a lot of time for you to give up. We really appreciate it, and obviously all the best, and please keep creating because it's reaching my heart.
Thank you so much, Robin.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, we are going to take another break. We will play I Don't Believe What You Say from Lisa Parade, and we'll get Jason Nathanson on the phone. We'll talk a little bit of pop culture down in the Southland with another L.A. native. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, inviting you to please stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're I don't know. I don't know how many minutes we're into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. It's being recorded on Wednesday. It's April the 23rd, 2008. My name is Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. We're also over on myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. And this is what's weird is this, I think, is the first complete show that I have done in over 2 years when we started doing this show that I have done completely by myself. I mean, in the studio. Obviously, we've had a bunch of folks on the phone with us today, but there's always somebody in the studio for me to gauge a reaction from, set the timing, talk to, and they're not here today. And the downside, of course, is that I miss the company. But the other downside is that I didn't realize this in advance, or I could have just done the show naked, which is as I prefer. And so I feel like I got dressed for nothing. And that just sucks. But not this.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
Yes, he is. An exciting young talent in Los Angeles. Jason Nathanson, KNX News Radio. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic. Sona Vista. Hello? Are you not there? Did I drop you? Hello? Are you fucking with me? No. Really? Hello? Okay, well, that worked out very well. Hold on here. We'll this is one of those shows today. Let's see. Jason Nathanson, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We'll just edit that part out. Don't worry about that. It's been one of those. Well, Sean couldn't make it over the hill today.
Uh-huh.
Parviz let me know that yesterday, kindly, that he may not be able to make it for the next few weeks because he's sort of ramped up with plumbing school, if that's possible. Lots of extra, lots of homework. He's got to get his diorama
How long
done.
Has he been in plumbing school now?
He's got to get his diorama done before the parent teacher conference. I don't know what goes in a plumbing diorama. You can send those answers, by the way, to robin@schnauzerlogic.com. And Sherry, who was on vacation in last week with her family, came back at the beginning of this week and was planning on being here, but came back to this kind of snowstorm of activity with her day gig. And so I wasn't able to find anyone to sit in here. So it's just kind of me doing the show out of order today. We'll paste it all together with duct tape and chicken wire down the
and
road.
And I'm the only loser who's still around.
No. Sean joined us on the phone earlier along with Doug Sovereign, and we just had a great conversation with Lisa Parade, and now we've got you down alive in Los Angeles.
Oh, good.
I love it. So yeah. What's new? What's exciting? What should we be paying attention to in the world of news and pop culture?
Oh, well, I just woke up from a nap, so, I mean, that's what's pretty exciting.
Katie Couric, how much longer is she over on CBS?
She's going to be around for a while.
You think so?
I don't see her going anywhere, at least. I mean, the conventional wisdom now is that she'll stick around through the elections and, you know, find some kind of exit plan, like a rock or something like that. But, I really don't know. I mean, they have a lot of money invested in her, and I don't see them letting her go anywhere soon. But, you know, I have no inside buzz being a CBS member. So, you know, we'll see.
Okay.
I don't know. I think she's fine. I don't know that they're going to do much better with anybody else. I don't think she's necessarily the problem.
What about me? Would you watch me on the nightly news? This is the CBS net. Well, wait a second.
No,
before
so
you laugh
you.
Out...
I mean, I would TiVo that every night.
Every night?
Every single freaking night.
I mean, why not me?
So that's the question we should all be asking. on this Passover is why not Robin?
Exactly. By the way, yes, is this in Pesach? Did you see your grandma?
I did see my grandma. You know, there's a matzah shortage.
Yes.
That's been the big news down here, and I hear it's the same up in the Bay Area there.
Oy vey!
You can't find this. Who ate the matzah?
It's an afikoman around the world.
Yeah, little kids all over are searching for it. They can't find it. There's no matzah. I don't know what the deal is. And they're running out of rice, too.
Well, I talked a little bit about that with Sean. It is sort of the beginning of an apocalypse of kind of biblical proportions. We're seeing, you know, there's not enough water, there's not enough energy, fuel, there's not enough rice, not enough corn, not enough grains in general. But political bullshit, that we got plenty of.
It's not the America that I once knew and loved.
Okay. I'll let you give me another read later in the show with more sincerity. But let's move forward. So last week, you had sent me some material saying that you might be going to a shoot, a particular, was it a photo shoot, a video shoot?
Well, you know, this is L.A., and they do a lot of movie shoots, and the media gets invited to the set every once in a while. So I got invited to the set.
Was this the latest Bobby De Niro film?
Not exactly.
Okay.
This was a... somehow I'm on Hustler's media list.
Somehow I'm on.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing you say to your mom. I don't know how I got on the list.
I don't know how it happened, but I'm on Hustler's media list.
All right.
And I got invited to a shoot for Not the Brady's Triple X Part 2.
Oh, my God. Take a wow now.
Last year they did Part 1, and it was apparently a big hit, and it had some crossover appeal because it came out at the same time the Brady's box set DVD, the regular one, came out. And so they got some coverage last year from what they call mainstream media. So they're filming Part 2 last week, and they invited the mainstream media. And I was one of the only people that showed up, along with somebody from Girls and Corpses magazine.
wait, let me write that down.
Yes.
Girls and Corpses.
And Corpses, yes.
Now, I mean, I know that I'm narrow casting, but, you know, whoa.
The market's bigger than you would think, apparently.
I guess.
For people who like girls and corpses with their masturbation. I mean, the guy gave me a copy of the magazine, and this is, I mean, talk about a sick fuck. This is just a strange...
I'm guessing with a title like that, there isn't a whole lot that's left to the imagination.
No, that's pretty much
right,
it.
There's no surprises in Girls and Corpses magazine.
That's what you get.
But who's advertising? That's what I want to know. Who's advertising in Girls and Corpses magazine?
Jeez, I can't even remember who.
Oh, you don't have it in front of you?
No, strangely enough, I left it at the shoot.
Oh, okay.
I didn't take my copy with me for fear of anybody ever finding it.
So where is this thing shot? Is it shot in a real studio? Is it shot like in a hotel room? I mean, where
Larry Flint Productions, Hustler, they own their own studio in the Valley, this big warehouse type thing.
Okay.
And strangely enough, and this is turning into the focus of the piece that I'm doing on porn and the economy, they're selling this big studio. Because of the change in the economy and the way porn is bought and sold and distributed now over the internet, and these blockbuster porns are becoming rarer and rarer, like the Brady one, this studio, this $3.8 million studio that they have in the Valley, they have to sell it because they just can't afford to keep it around anymore. The blockbuster is kind of a dinosaur thing of the past.
Wow.
So the porn industry is falling on, like every industry right now, the economy is not doing so good.
Well, is it falling on hard times, or is it just the nature of how we consume our pornography is changing?
It's both. It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
But it's definitely been a long shift from these, you know, big DVDs that people don't go to the store or order these DVDs online anymore, because you can go online and, you know, get your porn fixed in 20 seconds and you can get it for free. You know, you don't need to buy porn anymore if you know where to look. Not that I'm saying that I do, but I do. And you can get it for free. So
randomshow.blogspot.com.
Why pay? You know, if you want to go to schnauzerlogic.com and see girls with corpses, you can go do that for free. So that's kind of what...
So what is the shoot all about? Because obviously when I was in college, you know, I was in a fraternity, and, you know, you always think to yourself, oh, man, I'd love to be one of those things, you know? Is it interesting? Is it sexy? Is it just technical and boring?
Surprisingly enough, it was pretty technical and boring and not that exciting. I showed up at 4 o'clock and...
In the morning?
No, in the afternoon. The whole thing was going from 10 a.m. to midnight that day. And
wow.
They were doing 2 days of shooting, so two 14-hour days of shooting.
They shoot on film or on video, HD?
On digital video.
Okay.
And I showed up, and they didn't get to the sex for 7 hours.
Wow.
While I was there.
So what kind of prep are they doing?
I watched 7 hours of dialogue takes and retakes.
No!
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But everybody fast-forwards through that stuff anyhow.
Exactly. And I could not... there was no TiVo button in real life here for me.
Ba-doop, ba-doop, ba-doop.
No, I had to watch. I mean, and it was excruciatingly horrible. I mean, because watching actors on a set... in a real movie, do takes and retakes is boring enough, but to watch porn actors do it, and they had this horrible, cheesy song with the Brady's thing. It was horrible. It was almost a nightmare.
Was Ron Jeremy there?
No, Ron Jeremy was not there. He was in the original one though.
Okay.
He shows up in everything.
He does show up in everything.
Yeah.
Back when I was much younger, Harry Reem showed up in everything.
Harry
Reams.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, yeah, Harry, the famous Harry Reams. I think he's now a real estate salesman in Southern Florida or something like that. They found him because I guess he was in, what was the very, Deep Throat? He was in Deep Throat.
Okay.
He was, you know, kind of
Linda
the...
Linda Lovelace, right?
Yeah, mustachioed. And I remember going to see a film when I was... So when I was at MIT, they used to have something they called the drop day movie. So every semester, there was a date by which you had to drop your classes if you wanted to make sure that, you know, you weren't going to, you know, get a failing grade. You
sure.
could drop them by a particular date. It was called drop day. And after that, it'd be failing. And before that, it would just sort of not show up. So you kind of, you know, you'd measure the atmosphere. You'd say, you know, there's no fucking way I'm going to pass this thing, and I'm just going to drop it. And for a lot of people, that was a very difficult day, and so they would have the drop day movie. And invariably, what they would do is they would advertise a Disney film, and they would have all the posters all over campus, the drop day movie. And then you'd get there, and there would be a bad hand-scribbled slide saying, "We're very sorry, the distributor had messed up. Instead, what we have is a film called The Case of the Smiling Stiffs, starring Harry Reams, and, you know, blah, 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 if you're not interested in seeing it." Of course, everybody knew. I don't think they do that anymore. I think there's now, and there's more sensitivity to the fact that this was creating a hostile environment. We can talk about that on the show some other time. But anyhow...
Hey, you guys would just all sit there and watch porn together in
Yes,
a room?
The entire... Not in a room, in an auditorium, where we would also study physics. We would sit there and we'd watch porn.
I never got that whole watching porn together with people thing. I mean, when you're younger, you go to a friend's house and somebody would turn it on because the parents had cable and everybody would watch porn. I never understood that. Why that's enjoyable?
I don't know. I think there's probably a can you embarrass your friends kind of thing.
Okay, you're not all just sitting there whacking each other off.
No, I don't know if any. I mean, you know, here's what a freaking virgin I am. I never did anything in those movies. I just watched them.
Critique them for lighting.
I preferred the dialogue. One of the reasons I remember The Case of the Smiling Stiffs is it was funny. It had very good production values.
Well, then you would have loved this porn shoot.
Okay.
Dialogue upon dialogue upon dialogue. So I get there, and I'm there for 7 hours, and they keep telling me, oh, the sex is coming up. You're ready? You're ready for the sex? It's coming up. I'm like, yeah. Come on, let's go. And in the meantime, I'm interviewing people on the set. I mean, the male actors and the female actors. And, you know, it was pretty interesting. The first girl that they gave me to interview was your typical, you know, dumb as a rock porn star, just 19. And it was almost... It was almost sad. Like, she didn't even know where she was, and it was almost like they were taking advantage of her, and that kind of set the tone for the next interviews I would do with girls. And as I was talking to people, I found myself doing something which I thought was strange. When I would talk to the guys, I would interview them almost like I was their friend. Like, yeah, you're in porn. Good job. That's awesome. You know, it's cool. Sex. It's fun. Great. And when I would talk to the girls, it would almost be like I presumed that they were victims, like they didn't want to be there.
Huh.
They were there not of their own choice. They were somehow forced into it. And through my questioning of people, I noticed this strange double standard, and I wasn't doing it consciously. I was doing it subconsciously. So every guy interview I did was kind of rowdy, and every girl interview was almost depressing. And I found myself asking them questions like they had to have been forced into it, and talking to them about the seedier side of porn. And there has to be no way that they were there of their own volition, that there was something wrong with them or with their childhood or the way they were brought up.
Did you want to save them?
I don't know that I wanted to save them, but there was definitely a sense that they needed saving.
Huh.
Where the guys, there was no sense of that at all.
No.
And I was trying to figure out why I did that. And, you know, the only thing I could come up with is just, in society, it's okay for guys to have sex and express themselves sexually, but it's not for girls. And that's just kind of the way you think of things. And so when you go to a place like a porn set where everybody's having sex and everybody wants to be there, it's weird to kind of try to break down that social construction that you already have in your head. And every girl I talked to, nobody was forced to be there, and they all said that they wanted to be there. But the reason when I would ask them why are they in the business, none of them ever said sex. That was that almost to a T. I mean, that was way down the list if they did eventually say it, and most of them never said it at all. First was the money, and second was always fame.
Right.
And for the guys, it was about sex. That's why they wanted to be there. So, you know, in a way, that kind of reinforced the preconception that I already had and didn't know that I had.
Sure.
Was that it's about sex for guys, and it's about money and fame for girls, and not about sex. So it was interesting that it came up that way. And
did you eventually stick around for the so-called money shots?
Yes. By 10:45, they started. They're like, okay, here we go. And, you know, the director's looking at me. He's like, you ready to see some sex? And it was weird because it was okay to answer yes. I wasn't a pervert if I said yes, you know?
Everybody
was expecting it. Everybody wanted, the guys wanted me to stay around and watch them have sex.
No, they didn't.
And so did
really?
The girls.
Really?
That's what they said, at least.
Wow.
Yeah, they wanted, they were into it.
Did
it
you get digits?
no, I did not get any digits of the porn stars. There was one really, really nice girl that stood out, though. Her name is Aurora Snow. And she's been in the business about 8 years.
Okay.
She's 26 years old. And she was really intelligent. She used to be a student at UC Irvine, and she realized that, you know what, she can make a lot more money doing other things early on. And she dropped out, and she said she has a great time. And she was really, really nice, and I didn't actually get to watch her have sex, so it didn't kind of ruin, you know.
How close did you get?
To her or to sex?
Well, then when they were having sex, yeah.
I was right there.
When you say right there, I mean...
You know...
Really? They don't, like, clear the room out? They just, like...
3.5, 4, 5 feet, something like that.
And they're just going at it?
Yeah, they're just going at it. About 10:45, they made the call for sex scene, and the guy came in, and it was a threesome scene. And
are there fluffers, people that kind of get these guys... do they have to go through a ritual? Is there kind of... Huh?
They're not for this scene.
Okay.
I don't know if there are, or if that's true or not, that the fluffer exists, but for this scene, nobody needed to be fluffed.
Okay.
Put it that way.
All right.
And, you know, they walk in, and they kind of, you know, do a little talking, and then they just get right to it.
Now, did you feel, looking at these guys, inadequate in your own...
No, I've never really worried about that, whether I am or not in comparison. I mean, this guy was just freakishly big, so, I mean...
Well, that's my point. They usually are, right? I mean,
yeah.
When you've seen porns, the guys
sure.
are freakishly big.
And I just, you know, it's like, I don't watch a basketball game and say, geez, what's wrong with me? I'm not 6'11 and black. So, you know, watching this, it wasn't, you know, I didn't feel like I was lacking something. I just felt that guy had an extra something. And
like an arm.
like a baby's leg attached to his, I mean.
The actual imagery is a baby's arm holding an apple. that is the imagery. I think it's William Burroughs' Naked Lunch, but I could be wrong.
The guy was insane. And the guy who he was a 22-year-old guy, and he was talking to him, and he said at one point, he's like, you know, I think I'm a sex addict. I'm like, really? Go on. You don't say. And he went on to describe this one 30-hour day where he had sex 9 times with 14 different women or something. And it was just insane. I'm like, that's the furthest from my reality that you could possibly get, what this guy was describing. I mean, he would have sex on a porn set and then go home and then walk into a threesome with his roommate and some other girl. I mean, it was just, and this was in real life. This wasn't in a porn. So the life that these guys lead is just kind of insane. But they get to it, and they're having sex in front of me, and, you know, the director's got, he takes the camera off the tripod, and he's in there walking around, you know, holding it with the man on scene with the camera and going under angles, and there's a lighter following him with a spotlight kind of holding up and under things, and
it's just a business.
It's a business, and at the same time, I mean, they really looked into it. I mean, nobody was faking anything, at least in this scene.
They didn't ask you if you wanted to do a little cameo?
Yeah, nobody.
To be the naked pizza delivery boy?
There was one point where I could have been in the audience of one of the shoots. They were doing some.
Oh, really?
They're doing the
You could have told them your name was Robin Goldstein, and then I would have been on the credits. You would have gotten $50. I would have gotten the mad props, dude. What a possibility!
That would have been in the credits too, because they asked me for a stage name.
Fuck, Robin Goldstein is my stage name.
That could have been done.
I am so disappointed that you didn't get my name into a porn.
I didn't even think of it. Didn't even think of it.
I am always thinking of it. That's why I should be hosting the CBS Evening News.
The last year's porn that they did was kind of based on the scene, you know, the famous Brady episode where Marsha gets hit in the face with the football.
Yes.
And this year's that they're doing is based on the Davy Jones episode.
All right.
Where Marsha gets Davy Jones, she falls in love with him.
Of the monkeys, not the pirate.
Right.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're taking a break.
Okay.
We'll come back. I want to talk to you about the movie Young at Heart and some other things. And
yes.
You said you had a special announcement.
I do have a special announcement.
All right, well, we got to get to your special announcement.
Yes.
All right, on
very
the other
excited.
Side of this break.
Yes.
We'll play some more music from Lisa Parade. Let's see.
Yes.
I think we'll play It's Almost, Almost Time. She said It's Almost Time because she said that song had, I think she said clarinet or some band geek stuff in there. So we'll play a little bit of that. All right. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein on the phone with Jason Nathanson, and we are both inviting you to please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Shalom, and welcome back to second hour Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal, straight white blues, vegetarian, lesbian, praying boy, trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, bad attorney with obsessive humor and a master's degree in city planning. Playing tunes today, all day, all music from Lisa Parade, who we talked with earlier in the show, or perhaps later in the show, depending upon how I cut up the entire program when I'm done. Here in the studio by myself, but on the phone, Jason Nathanson, let's say welcome back in Sona Vista.
I love her version of Hava Nagila. It's great.
I mentioned to you, we talked to earlier in the week, that I was looking for my nephew. By the way, we haven't mentioned this yet, but we'll be doing a show next week, and then we're going to be taking a week off, maybe 2 weeks, because I'm going out of town to my nephew's bar mitzvah. Hello? Still there? Hello? Did I drop you again? Can you hear me?
Caller, are you there?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Who is this? Caller? Hello? Hello, hello?
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you hear that?
I heard you say, because I'm going, and then silence.
And then somebody said, caller, are you there?
That was me.
Oh, you're fucking with me.
I couldn't hear anything, no.
Well, I'm hating you so much right now.
I thought you hung up on me.
No. Don't do this to me.
I thought you hung up on me.
You did. You said, caller, are you there?
Yeah, that was me.
But you didn't say it with this nasally accent that you always use in your interviews. Why don't you use that voice all the time?
Ah, sorry.
That's like when Carell uses his, you know, man voice. I'm pissed at Carell. That's a whole other story. Anyhow, you would... fuck it. Let's get on to the next thing here. Fuck you. I was going to talk about how you talked about Bar Mitzvah Rave and Hava Nagila. I went looking for it. There's like 12 different techno rave house versions of Hava Nagila.
Yeah? Did you finally find one that you can use?
You don't care. I know you don't care because you just had some fun with me.
I thought you hung up on me.
No, I didn't.
I thought you said I was all right, Spider.
I said you were all right, Spider?
From Goodfellas.
I don't even know what that is. You know, I've never seen Goodfellas.
What?
I have never seen Goodfellas.
Wow.
Okay. We were doing really well before the break. Let's continue. Okay. So there's something you want to do. Special. Wait. You want to have a special? Okay. Hold on. I got new software here. I can do special announcement stuff. Hold on. Wait. Where the fuck is it? Not that one.
We were doing so well before the break.
We were. What about this one?
Hey, where are the white women at?
No, that's Barack Obama wondering about the voters in... all right, I guess we'll have to play this one here. Hold on.
Oh,
all right. Special announcement time.
Yes, it's good for me, and it's good for this show as well. Coming up this summer, I will be going to the Republican and Democrat conventions.
Wow.
Reporting for CBS Radio.
Get out of here.
No.
So you and Doug Sovereign will be in the same place at the same time.
I know, and nobody's ever seen us together before.
Conversion of bald Jews.
People are wondering if we can coexist in the same spot, and I say yes, we can.
Have you met Doug?
I've not, no.
Well, we'll have to make an introduction, at least on the air, before you guys get together out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. And also, you're both CBS.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah.
Wow.
We've had him on our show before.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's very exciting. Are you part of a whole KNX sending a whole bunch of people out there?
There's two of us going. Dick Helton, who's our senior political correspondent.
Yes.
And myself.
And are you going to be on the air or behind the scenes?
I will be doing both.
Wow. So you'll be doing like the color, like the human interest pieces, the color?
I am. I'm going to be the guy, you know, in the bars with the drunk college Republicans.
Get out of here.
I'll be the guy following Obama girl around.
This is so cool.
I'll be doing the fun. He's going to be doing the hardcore politics and I'll be doing everything else.
Wow. Well, you sold out. Congratulations. I am very proud of you. This is what your mom and I really wanted for you.
It's very exciting. It should be a lot of fun. So that's the end of August. I'll be in Denver, and the beginning of September, I'll be in Minneapolis. That's the Republican in Minneapolis.
All right, so we're going to have, maybe we'll be able to even get some live reports.
Yeah, that's the plan.
How cool is that?
Yeah, I'll be the roving Schnauzer Logic correspondent.
All right, do you have any other special announcements?
I have a plug.
Well, yeah, we'll give you a plug.
Okay, I'm doing the Revlon Run Walk for Cancer Research.
Okay.
And that is coming up Mother's Day weekend in a couple weeks in May here.
Mm-hmm.
A 5K run walk here in Los Angeles, and I'm on a team with my mom and a bunch of relatives, and there's a website which hopefully you will be kind enough to link to
your
page.
I will.
Where people, if they so wish to donate to our team, they can do that. We are the East Meets West team on Revlon Run Walk.
Okay.
And so if people want to sponsor me, they can go ahead and do that and feel good doing that.
Recommend doing that.
Yeah.
And you've been doing more live reports down for KNX. Now, I noticed we're going to play a little piece right now, and you had mentioned this to me. This is a group called Young at Heart.
Yeah. It's a new documentary movie out about the seniors chorus from Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
People in their 70s and 80s. Singing Nirvana songs and Radiohead and Rolling Stones, and it's
well, wait a second. When you're talking about people in their 70s and 80s singing Rolling Stones, you could theoretically be talking about the Rolling Stones.
That is true. That is very true.
I just want to be perfectly accurate here.
Perfectly clear on that. Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Well, I want to play your report. One thing that I noticed is that you actually come through a little bit clearer on this than you have in previous reports, and I was disappointed. I expected to hear a lot more echo, a lot more, you know, ambient
off
sound.
Mic? No.
Yeah, a lot more of you off mic. Let's play this for the folks right now, because this is a nice little piece.
Let's set it up. They had a concert last week in L.A., and I went to the concert.
All right. This is Jason Nathanson, KNX News Radio, 1080, 1050,
1070.
It's someplace after the 10s on the dial. Here it is down on at the Young at Heart opening.
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
It's one of the strangest and greatest cover shows you'll ever see. It's the Young at Heart Chorus, about 30 seniors in their 70s and 80s, covering songs from Nirvana to Radiohead to Jimi Hendrix.
Whatever it is, that girl put a spell on me.
It's wonderful. It's something that you know you've done a good job because they're clapping. Otherwise, they wouldn't.
So nobody's booed you yet? Nobody's thrown
not
tomatoes?
Not yet, but you never can tell.
Grant Milner says he gets mixed reaction from friends and family about what he does.
They might think I'm crazy. In fact, some of my friends do. In fact, the last 2 or 3 months, I've let my hair grow. And some of my neighbors say, what happened? Did your barber die? I think they're actually envious, but they don't understand what's going on, you know. And it's such a wonderful experience. It's changed my life totally.
Bob Sillman started the chorus in 1982, and he says times have changed.
The old people were really old back then. It's funny, you know. And back then, 70 looked really old. People who were 70 looked really old, you know. You know, 70 is the new 50 or something. You know, you look at 70-year-olds now. That's why we, you know, back then the minimum age was 60, and now the minimum age is 73 because people are older a lot later.
I feel nice.
Backstage, you're more likely to find bottles of Geritol than booze, and syringes of insulin are more likely than heroin. But Norma Landry says they still live a rock and roll lifestyle.
Craziness and partying, yes. Sex, I don't know. I don't visit rooms with that in mind to see what's going on.
Now you can tell by the way I lose my walk.
A documentary movie about the chorus called Young at Heart opened last week, and Grant Milner hopes that people learn just because you're old doesn't mean you can't rock.
And I live in a village where there are 85 homes, and most of the people are just after a certain age are just waiting. As we get older, there's no reason for us to be sitting back and waiting to die. We should spend our time living, not dying.
Jason Nathanson, KNX 1070 News Radio.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
That was a lot of fun. So I did this on Thursday night, and then Friday night I went to the porn shoot. those are my two assignments back to back. Little juxtaposition there.
I see. And did you have a little sorbet between the two to clear out your palate?
I did, yes. A cold, cold shower. That was a lot of fun. It was actually one of my favorite assignments I've done so far because, I mean, these people were just, they were so friendly and so full of life and so in love with what they were doing. And it just, it rubbed off. And the crowd at the show was just, I mean, in awe. They loved every second of watching these guys perform. And so the movie is out. I know it's playing in San Francisco right now. If you're up in the Bay Area, it's playing in L.A. down here and across the country. It's in select markets right now.
That's called Young at Heart. And so the TV shows are back, but the season is all fucked up at this point because there's little bits of this and little bits of that.
Yeah, it's really kind of weird.
It's very, very weird.
Hard to get into a show and like a show.
American Idol is doing horribly.
Yeah.
Horribly.
It's weird because the season finale is coming up, and this is something I went to last year.
Right. And something we were talking about last year.
Yeah, and this year I'm like, well, I don't even think I care to go. I mean, because there's no Sanjaya. There's no... Nobody's talking about Idol right now. Nobody seems to care. So.
I have to be honest with you. I have not watched a single episode of Idol this year. Part of it is, as well, and I don't know that they would have expected this, is Idol used to be the intro for House. And I'm a huge fan of House. And so, as a result, you know, there's a concept of least objectionable programming, right?
Right.
LOP, which is, you know, you'll kind of leave the thing on the channel. Well, for me, there was also least objectionable programming on the channel coming before, which meant, you know, if I knew that House was coming on at 9 on, you know, KTVU Channel 2, and there was nothing else going on, I would turn Idol on just to remind me so I didn't have to, even though the TiVo gets it, I like watching House live. And so you kind of keep Idol on, it kind of one flows into the next, blah, blah, blah.
It is one of the good shows to get live, House.
Yeah.
If you don't get the live version,
Shut up. You're giving me way too much grief today. Did Parviz call you to tell you to give me shit because he wasn't going to be here?
I miss him.
Well, I miss him
too. A lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I miss him too. Well, you can watch him over on the web.
Oh, joy.
Did you see the video of us on the web?
I watched maybe the first minute of it.
It's only on for, it's only like 9 minutes.
It's only 9 minutes.
It's our first stop break of the last show.
In web terms, that's
I know.
Enormously.
But, you know, I have to tell you, if you haven't done it, go over to youtube.com/schnauzerlogic and go find show number 66. I have to tell you, it makes me laugh every time. I am very impressed. First of all, there's a couple of things that I realize. First of all, I am a huge fucking egomaniac. I don't pay attention to anybody else in the studio. We now have video to prove it. Sherry is clearly trying to talk about something else. I'm ignoring her 100%. Just totally ignoring her. And having watched it now, I feel badly about the fact that I keep ignoring her because she's trying to explain that she'd had a bad day and, you know, she's trying to, and I, it's like there's no possibility of breaking through Robin's energy. I'm just like, damn the torpedoes, full speed, me ahead. So that was that. And Parviz is, I think I stated it in the video. He's an idiot, you know. He's an idiot. He laughs at everything, but it's so important to have him there. He kind of punctuates the rhythm of the show. But
so we should put that on before House every week. I mean, you just gave a great pitch. If I was in the room right now, I'd buy that show.
It couldn't be worse. It couldn't be worse. So when is the Idol finals?
I believe from the email it was May 21st or something like that.
But you're right. Without Sanjaya, without that whole, and nobody really want, you know, Paul has been keeping it together, so she's not the train wreck that she was last season.
Yeah.
People are kind of tired of Simon's nonsense.
Like anything, you know, it runs its course. And, I mean, we're talking about this like the show is dead, and it's not.
No.
It's still one of the ratings kings this season. But there's something to be said for, you know, like a lot of shows before, like Survivor, which created a huge phenomenon for a couple seasons, and then, you know, it's still on the air, but it's not nearly the buzzworthy show that it once was.
I'm looking here at last week's. It's certainly winning its slot.
Yeah.
Right? It's no question it's winning its slot, but it isn't the high show of the week. right?
What is the high shout? Do you have that there?
Let's see. CSI and Without a Trace.
Yeah.
Beat It. Ghost Whisperer, Prime, The Price is Right, Prime Time, and Numbers on Friday. Beat It. Yep.
Ghost Whisperer?
Oh, wait. American Idol wasn't on that night. Sorry.
Okay. I mean, because then we'd have a problem. If Ghost Whisperer was beating it, then we'd really be...
I was just looking at the purple. I was looking at the purple, which is the winning of the night. But okay. I didn't bother to see what else was on. Yeah, but I mean, CSI beat it on Thursday night.
So what are you watching these days? I mean, what's really getting you?
I'm watching... I like the NBC comedies. I watch My Name is Earl, 30 Rock, The Office, and Scrubs.
Mm-hmm. And The Office is back and doing well. I'm happy to have it back.
And 30 Rock is back, and that's doing fine. And My Name is Earl is back, and that's doing fine. I'm all about the Monday night comedies on CBS. I like The Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men, and I like those.
Your Mother and...
Yeah, I don't watch the Mother one, although I do like Doogie Howser, but I don't know, I didn't get into that. And now, actually, I like Neil Patrick Harris, and I like Allison Hannigan, so there's two people in that I really enjoy. There must have been something else on initially that I just kind of didn't get into. Tuesday nights you know what, Eli Stone. Yeah. I really dig Eli Stone, which, of course, is gone now, but I really been digging it. Monday nights I've been watching New Amsterdam. I really enjoyed that. Tuesday nights was Boston Legal, which I'm a fan of. Wednesday are the Wednesday. There's nothing really on Wednesday. There's like a Law and Order. Well, Wednesday nights I watch South Park and the Lewis Black thing on Comedy Central. Thursday are all the comedies and the CSIs. And Friday is Bill Maher, and then I go to bed.
Oh, don't forget about Top Chef on Wednesday. That's on tonight. I like Top Chef.
You know, they just gave us the Food Channel here in high definition, which I guess makes sense, but they also gave us CNN in high definition. I mean, really? Larry King? Philadelphia.
Well, you can watch the meth addicted people from CNN do their reports live. Did you hear about that?
I like that guy. I like that guy. When I used to, I've been watching that guy for a long time, because when I used to go to, he's been on CNN forever.
Is he the British guy?
Yeah, he's the British guy.
Yeah.
And when I would go traveling overseas for business and could only get CNN International, he was kind of like their headliner for CNN International.
Right, right.
I like him a lot.
And he likes meth. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and he also liked tying something around his penis and then having...
and then around his neck.
And then around his neck.
From his neck to his penis.
He had his neck connected to his penis. Which we all do, just not directly.
And it's usually hidden from most people.
Well,
I mean, I've got that going right now, but it's under my clothes. You couldn't tell if you were looking at me.
I know you well enough. All right. Are you going to be on KSCO tomorrow morning?
Yes, I will be.
All right.
For 7 weeks.
So we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Outstanding. Thanks very much. And there's also the Revlon Run Walk for Your Life. What's it?
Yeah. Sponsor me.
Okay.
For cancer sure. Survivors.
All right, we'll put up a link on the webpage. People can you don't care about a lot of money. Even the $5 is fine.
Yeah, right? Whatever.
Whatever.
Or just go there.
How much have you pledged to raise?
I think as a team we're raising $2,000.
That's a lot of geld.
Yeah.
That's a lot of geld.
Yeah. Well,
now I feel like I got to come through with more than a $10 donation.
You do whatever you want.
All right.
That you're even considering it makes me happy. That's a mitzvah.
All right. Is it?
It is.
Okay. You know, if you can... that's right. I got to go. listen, go to bed. Have a good day. We'll talk to you next week. Jason Nathanson over at KNX 1070.
Yes. That's
yay. .com. All right. Take care, my friend. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. All right, we'll take another break. We'll play another tune by Elise Parade. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll wrap this bad baby up. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Hello.
the shoe has dropped. And this ain't the first on the bubble spot. And you ain't the first to sit on the ledge. Many more before fell off the edge. So press on, press on, pull through, pull through. I could be the one, and so could you, to break apart that chain that holds us to the wheel and grinds us up. Ouch!
That in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're giving up on the time for the show this week. I haven't done this in a long time. Welcome back, Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, blah, 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 saying some of you said to me and to you. Yeah, this will be very strange. Back in the day, I don't know how many of you were listeners to Schnauzer Logic before there was podcasting. And after I did my first stint on KSCO as a weekend host, but before I did the Monday through Friday, 5 day a week, you know, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. gig, which really was, that was really the opportunity to really hone my skills. I think when it's like learning how to play an instrument or a sport. If you only get to do it for 2 hours on the weekend, you develop a measure of proficiency, but it's hard really to develop expertise in it. But if you want to be really good, you have to do it every single day. And so doing the show Monday through Friday from 9 to 11 on KSCO gave me the opportunity to become really good. But between the first show and the second show, I did what was a streaming shoutcast stream of Schnauzer Logic. We used to do it on Saturday afternoons. We used to do it live. We used to have people actually in a little like a little chat room, and they could call us because we were live and we had a phone number, and we actually had some weird callers. It was an interesting little show. So I've now forgotten. But oh yes. And so at that point the show was fragmented because we would sort of do things out of order and then paste them together. But since we started doing the show a couple of years ago, it has been pretty much linear. We start recording every Wednesday at 5 o'clock California time and record effectively through for 2 hours and don't usually stop tape. If there are mistakes, you guys get to hear them. If there are unexpected things, you guys get to hear them. The only things that I cut out of the show are little bits and pieces that I think either, someone later says, well, we probably didn't want to say that and don't want that out there for all time, and we respect that, or technical glitches like there were on today's show, which you may or may not get to hear. So, but today, because we didn't have anyone in the studio, and I had promised to get to Doug Sovereign so quickly, and I wanted to get to Lisa Parade so quickly, and Jason in the various times, we're all out of order. So as I'm recording this now, it's 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, I've still not recorded the opening of the show, and yet what I'm going to do now is record the closing of the show, so I can do this. I'm a professional. Anyhow, what I started to say to Jason before he started fucking with me is we'll do a show next week, and hopefully Sean and Sherry and Parviz will be in the studio, and we'll have Jason on the phone. And then we're taking 1 and possibly 2 weeks off, unless we decide to move things around, because I need to go to New York. Don't need to go, but I want to go to New York. My nephew is going to be 13, and he's having a bar mitzvah, which people know, even if you're not Jewish, is the ceremony of the Jewish faith where a boy becomes a man and takes on the responsibilities of the community. I don't know if it makes as much sense today as it did when the tradition started. Certainly back then it was important to have men, 10 men, in order to form a minyan. That's what was required in accordance with the Old Testament in order to pray in a synagogue. You can obviously pray by yourself as a party of one, but to form a congregation, you needed to have 10 men. It's called a minyan. And so you needed to have younger men. And I'm sure there's more of a story there, and if I get my uncle, the rabbi, on the phone, he can explain it to me. But anyhow, my nephew is having his bar mitzvah, and so I need to go to New York for this. And I was thinking that this is the first time that I will be going to New York in, I don't know, maybe 15 years, maybe more, where I'm not going because of some tragedy. I since I moved out to California, I've only been to New York for, you know, illness or death, really, really sad situations. And so to go back for something which is really a mitzvah, a blessing, a joyous event, is really, it's delightful. And I'm sort of thinking about it differently. And it occurred to me that having grown up in New York and started practicing law in New York and gone to law school in New York and having lived in New York, that I have lots of friends in the New York area, many of whom I have not seen in many, many years, including all the people I used to know and work with and was good friends with at Sony Corporation. And my friends in Englewood and my friends in the city. And so I thought, well, it'd be a good opportunity for me to spend a few days, maybe spend a week, go to the museums, get caught up with friends. And, you know, I've stayed in expensive cities before. I've go to Los Angeles. I know that an expensive hotel room can be, you know, a couple hundred dollars, $250 a night. Forget it. The hotels in New York are unfucking believable. I mean, they kind of start. Now, if I wanted to stay down in Soho, I mean, if there are parts of the city that I can stay in that are not so expensive, but my sister lives in the Upper East Side, the temple's on the Upper East Side, so I thought it'd be nice to stay near my sister where she lives, and the museums are up there by Central Park. It'd be nice to sort of stay in the same general area. We're looking at hotel rates for, you know, kind of medium, you know, three-star hotels, because I need to be working out of these places, of like $300 a night and up. And these are even with discounts. I mean, the best price I was able to find for a really decent room was like $325 a night, and that was guaranteed, prepaid for the whole 8 nights, no cancellations, no changes, no nothing. So and I just can't see spending like $3,000, you know, with taxes. Is, I mean, my first car that I owned, that I bought with my own money, was a Toyota Corolla station wagon. I paid $3,000 for that. I realized for that amount of money, I could go buy that car again today, go park it in Manhattan and sleep in it for a week, and probably be just as comfortable and have my car. So it occurred to me that what I could do was what I did when I went to Paris many years ago. I could rent someone's apartment. They have apartments and condos for rent. And so, smart me, a child of the internet, yet it never even occurred to me to go on the internet to look for these things. And there are tons and tons of various apartment rentals. On Craigslist was the obvious place to look, but other places. And so it looks like, crossed fingers, I may have found a place for far less than $350 a night on the Upper East Side, right near Central Park. And I'll be able to stay there for a week. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Anyhow, many thanks to Sean Meehan and to Doug Sovereign, and of course to Jason Nathans for being part of today's show. And the biggest thanks are reserved for Lisa Parade. Check her out over on myspace.com/loveaparade or www.loveaparade.com. We'll be back next week. Until then, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. Have fun, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.